Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back with more Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio. If you have questions for Dr. Mixon, today is the day to give us a call. He will be gone next week. We'll have Dr. Samira in. So today is your Dr. Mixon day. Here is that number to get through, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770, which is exactly what Linda dialed in San Diego. Linda, welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello, Linda. How can we help?
Yes, I would like to know what you know about, I think I'm pronouncing it right, hyperemesis gravidarum.
Hyperemesis gravidum. Okay.
Hyperemesis gravidum.
Yeah. Pregnant. Yeah, we call these the pregnant pukies. Yeah. It's just basically a woman who is pregnant and she is vomiting far more than usual. Frequently, these ladies are getting dehydrated. They have nutritional problems because they can't keep anything down. Sometimes they're vomiting, four, five, six, seven times a day. Once in a while, they need to be hospitalized, rehydrated, given some vitamins, and then probably a suppository to help settle their stomach and get them so they don't vomit so much. It usually fades out after the first trimester. So the first 3 months are usually the worst. And then after that, they get better and better. And by the time they're halfway through the pregnancy, very few are still vomiting. So can you give me a little more detail on what's going on with this?
Yeah,
I presume this is a daughter, yes, or a niece. Your voice sounds like, yes, you are a lady of some mature years who is no longer fertile. So.
Yes. Yeah, it's my daughter, and it's her third pregnancy. Her first two pregnancies, she's been really thrown by this because her first two pregnancies were, she says, a breeze. She was healthy babies, beautiful pregnancies, like labor and delivery. She had it at a childbirthing center with midwives in a pool. I mean, it was just, she said it was the best experience she ever had. And then she got pregnant with this one, and she's almost 10 weeks. And she does keep down more than she throws up, but it's just thrown her for a loop because I think it's affect her mentally a little bit too, because she seems like is depressed because she can't function like she needs to function for her other kids and wants to function. Anyway, so she's been going a couple times a week, well, at least once a week for the last few weeks to get a intravenous hydration therapy with vitamins and stuff. And she's drinking tons of ginger tea and split pea soups, whatever she can try to hold down. But I just wondered if there's anything, that we should be doing better or more of, or what's the prognosis?
Well, the prognosis is it will fade. I mean, she's 10 weeks into her 40-week gestation, so she's about 25% in. By the time she's, another 3 or 4 weeks, it should start improving. And in another 7 or 8 weeks, it'll probably be gone. So she's past the midway point of this problem for most women. I mean, yeah. Every pregnancy is different. Every lady is different. But generally, that's the pattern. First trimester first. And then by the time they're halfway through the pregnancy, very few women are still nauseated.
Yeah. Is there something like concern first two? You said every pregnancy is different, and I get that. But is there something like nutritionally lacking or something? I mean, should she have an extensive blood?
It's a response to the rapidly rising hormone levels.
Okay.
You know, generally what happens is I was describing PMS and menopause earlier in the show. If you do get pregnant, you know, you peak your testosterone, your estrogen, and you get a pretty good bump of your progesterone right at when you release the egg. And then if that egg is fertilized and now you've got that new baby starting in there, her body and the placenta start kicking out hormones together. And progesterone levels rise very, very rapidly, and estrogen levels rise, and testosterone levels rise. Depending on whether she's having a boy or a girl, the testosterone will actually start the masculinization process while baby is still in her uterus. And these rapidly rising hormones are what is causing the nausea. The older she gets, for some reason, women with their second, third, fourth, fifth pregnancy are not immune to this. It's for some women, it gets worse and worse with each pregnancy.
Because she is 35 now, but she had her other two when she was in her 20s. You know?
Yeah, and again, she's past her peak childbearing years, and so her mm-hmm. body's having a little more trouble coping with this rapid hormone rise.
Okay. So the baby is going to get all it needs regardless, right?
Baby gets first dibs on everything.
Yeah.
So, yep. You know, her mental bones.
According to Mother Nature, okay, mom is disposable. It's the baby that this whole thing is about.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So is okay. Dr. Mixon, is there any, you know, that one of those old wives' tales was if it's all, you know, if you're so morning sick, you're going to have a girl. And if, you know, not, maybe it's a boy.
Know. You know, I've delivered hundreds and hundreds of babies.
I was sick with all of mine. So yeah. I was like,
Yeah. And see, my first wife never got sick, never got morning sick.
Okay.
She loved being pregnant after the first trimester. The way I always knew she was pregnant, I'd walk home, walk in the door, and she'd be on the couch weeping.
Oh.
And I'd say, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I don't know." And she was just crying and crying. I knew she was pregnant.
Yeah.
She loved being pregnant. Mm. And I loved sex. And that's a dangerous combination for any couple.
Yeah. How many kids do you have, Dr. Mixon?
I've had a total of nine.
Yeah. Okay.
Seven by birth, two by adoption. But yeah. Yeah. So, but I've got a daughter right now who is pregnant with her third, and she also is suffering for hyperemesis and has been hospitalized three times trying to, you know, to keep her from dehydrating. Fortunately, it's starting to fade. She's almost, you know, almost halfway through. And so it's going away. So yeah, I'm very familiar with this between my children and grandchildren. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, ma'am.
It's
take
nice
care.
There to help all of us out here. Thank
oh,
you.
Yes, Linda. Oh, that's good. I remember when I was pregnant with number two and number three, whenever I was so sick, I kept reminding myself, okay, my hormone levels must be high.
That's right.
Things are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Baby is healthy.
Yes.
And that kind of helped me mentally get through all that. Yeah. It's like, okay, it's doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got married young and we had a whole bunch of kids up front. And then, you know, I put all my effort into my profession and none into my family. And so that marriage fell apart. All my fault from working. She is and was a great human being and a great mom. Mm. But I was single for 17 years. Never, ever, ever thought I'd remarry until I came across Bandine 20 years ago. and have now been remarried for the last 20 years. And Bandine did not want children when we first got together, which was fine with me. I was 58 years old when we got married, you know, 57, 58, and she was in her late 20s, 27, 28 years old, and did not want children. Very common among girls in their 20s. Mm-hmm. And then the 30s struck. And in her 30s, she started getting baby hungry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and when I was 64 years old, and she was 34, coming up on 35, she came to me one day and said, "Jerry, I know I told you I didn't want a baby, but now I really do." And, you know, if you really love a woman, you can't tell her she can't have this basic part of being a woman. Mm. It's just a female drive. So she was telling me the truth when she didn't want a baby, and she was telling me the truth when she did. Biology does what biology
does. Yes, it does. I was one of those. Yeah. And then I couldn't get enough. Yeah. I want another one.
I saw this in medical school. You know, all the young girls in their 20s that wanted to be doctors. And they went to the school and they were swearing, "We're going to work just like the men. You don't make special provisions. We're just like the guys. We're going to do it. We don't want babies. We don't want motherhood. We don't want." And then they got through medical school. They got through their internship. Now in their residencies, they're in their 30s. And all of a sudden, those same very powerfully spoken feminists were saying, "Don't you realize we're women? We need a mommy track. You can't work us like you do the men. Why, we need a way that we can take care of children and still be..." And I'm saying, you know...
You can't win.
But it's the reality.
Yes. Biology.
Life changes us. And at different stages in life, we want this. And then later, we want that. And the wants and the desires and the rationing is equally honest in both situations. It's just a different stage of life, you know? So when Bandine wanted a baby, we figured out a way. I went ahead. I offered her adoption. She didn't want to adopt. I offered her donor sperm because I was in my mid-60s. She said, "Nope, I want your baby." So that's what we did. So my last child was born when I was 65 years old. Yeah, and she's now 12. I'm 77. And we're having a wonderful time. Mm. I love being Ivory's daddy.
Oh, you have such a beautiful little girl together.
Yeah,
yes.
She is just a
young woman almost.
Yeah, she is on the verge. Yes. She is on the verge.
Aww.
Yeah, I have already determined that I will allow dating when she's 32, not before. But,
yeah. And does that have anything to do with she is an amazing fencer? And she's learning defense and use a sword.
You know, she's herself. She's a pianist. Mm-hmm. She loves going to the mall.
Oh.
And where they have the pianists at the mall sometimes. And she walks up, and she's quite a brave little girl. And she says, "Would you mind if I had a turn?" And she often talks them into letting her play the piano. And so she likes to put on a bright red mask so she can't see the keyboard.
Oh.
And then she will play Beethoven, you know, with no vision, all muscle memory on the keyboard.
All memory.
And she just eats it up when the crowd gathers and everybody's charging and clapping and stuff, you know, so yeah. She's quite a nice little pianist, and she is a fierce épée fencer.
Okay.
I love her shirt that says, you know, "Fencing, make new friends and stab them."
Wonderful. Oh, so much fun. Okay. Oh, I hear the music. We're taking a quick break, and we will be back with more of your questions for Dr. Jerry Mixon. Here is that number to get through. We've got some space for you. We have 45 more minutes of our show today. 1-800-465-8770. That number again is 1-800-465-8770. Dr. Mixon is here this week, and we'll be taking a break next week. Well, not really. It's work. But he won't be here. We'll have Dr. Samira. So why don't you call? If you'd like to get through, we'll put you in the call queue. 1-800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
Oh, party hop.
We don't rock around our Christmas tree much. The cat does.
Yes.
She loves the Christmas tree.
Jumping around the Christmas tree. You know, Brenda Lee, who sings that, was 13 years old when she recorded that.
Was she?
Just she sounds amazing. Older. She does sound older and still rocking around the Christmas tree, right. I believe. So, wow. Well, Merry Christmas. We've got the Christmas music going on. This is Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. And we're taking your phone calls at 1-800-465-8770. And we are headed to Marysville. Ian is on the line. Welcome Hello. To the show, Ian.
Hello, Ian. How can we help today?
Thank you very much. Well, I listen to you every Saturday morning. I'm a patient. I show horses at a national level, and I ride every weekend, and so I'm on my way down the bar. And I had a blood work done up. I see Dr. Irina.
Uh-huh.
My question is about my estradiol level.
Okay.
It's about one. It's up at 110, and it seems every blood work has gone up a little bit. All my other things are great. She does have me on one medication, and we just started me on, I think it's called DIM.
Yeah. Okay, so you're a...
My question is, you're
physically active, so I'm guessing you're not significantly overweight.
Sure, well, a little bit, but I'm still physically active.
Okay. There is a hormone, there's an enzyme in abdominal fat that converts testosterone into estradiol. It's called right. aromatase. And if that's what's going on, we can give you a very low dose of an aromatase inhibitor, about a fourth of a milligram once or twice a week, and that'll usually damp down the estrogen levels to more reasonable levels.
I am on that.
Okay.
I'm on that right now. We just upped it to 3 times a week.
Okay, so but let's do something a little bit different, because what we found a while back, okay. a few years ago, we had a subset of men that no matter how much aromatase inhibitor we gave them, their estrogens kept going up. And so we sent their blood off to LabCorp and asked them to please run it by a different method. Because there is a protein, and for some reason LabCorp can't tell us what the protein is, but they say there's an interfering protein that is giving artificially high levels of estrogen on the tests with certain machines, with some types of machines. And it turns out that the machine in our lab that we use for measuring estrogen is of that type. And so there are men that actually are putting out a protein, and we've asked them, what is the protein? LabCorp said they don't know what it is, but when we test the estrogen by an alternative method with a different type of device, it turns out the estrogen is not that high at all. Really, it's an artifact. And so first step, ask Dr. Irina to have LabCorp test it by a different method. And, you know, and if she has any questions, have her call me. We'll visit about it. But I came across this, oh, golly, 4 or 5 years ago. We had a rash of guys with running very high estrogens that made no sense. And it turns out it's a lab error, not the person.
Well, my other follow-up on that kind of is breast tissue. It seems like my left breast tissue seems to be a little more developed right now than my right.
Okay, well, in which case, it
so
may indeed be there. Yeah. Well, all right. So if you're getting hyperestrogen physical symptoms, that's a different question. Then it may be real.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is something that's going to take more investigation, you know. And So step one, let's double check by a different method. Let's make sure that the measurement is real. And then if it is, or if it isn't, if you really don't have high estrogen, then the question is, why are you getting some enlargement on one side?
Okay.
And that can be something as simple as the way you're applying your testosterone. If you're applying
right now, it's just scrotum.
Okay. So you're not putting it in your axilla or biceps or anything?
No, we quit doing that the last, about 3 months ago.
Okay. Because sometimes if you're getting it on the inner arm or the axilla, you'll get enough across the chest wall that you actually convert some estrogen locally from the testosterone. See, testosterone and estrogen are almost the same molecule. There's one hydroxyl group difference. And by just that one little change of stripping a hydroxyl, you turn testosterone into estrogen. And and some guys' breast tissue is capable of doing that pretty efficiently. So that's why, but if it's on the scrotum, that's far enough away that unless you're running very high blood levels, that shouldn't be an issue. But we'll investigate. Okay. Let's find it. I love a good puzzle. We'll find an answer.
Great. And my question, will that tissue dissipate?
Yes. Yeah, it'll go away.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Great.
Let me give you one scary possibility, of course, and that we do need to check out, and that is breast cancer occurs in men.
Yes, that was my other thought.
Yeah, the incidence is men is less than 1/100th that of women. So, we'll see 100 cases in women for every man we see, or sometimes 200 cases in women for every man that'll get it. But it does rarely happen in men. And so, if we're getting breast enlargement on one side, then we may need to take a close look and see what's going on. Get an MRI and see what that tissue looks like.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for the call. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, and we are now headed to Burien. We have Philip calling. Welcome to the show, Philip.
Hello, Philip.
Good morning, doctors. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir. How can I help?
I don't expect you to remember, but I talked to you a while back about my girlfriend having hemorrhoids. Well, it turned into colorectal cancer.
Oops. So it wasn't hemorrhoids at all.
So anyway, she's now on low-dose chemo with Dr. Chin here in the Seattle area. Mm-hmm. And my question is, after listening to your station, which I do every Saturday, the estrogen and testosterone, they have said to stop taking hormones. I wondered about your opinion on that.
I have not seen any papers, and that doesn't mean they don't exist. It just means I haven't had occasion to look for people with colorectal cancer and with different types and the impact of the hormones. My guess is most physicians, if they don't know what it does or doesn't do, just say stop. Don't take a chance.
Yeah. Okay.
We know that estrogen lowers the risk of getting colon cancer. Women on estrogen lower their risk of getting colon cancer by about 40%. So, not only does estrogen not cause colon cancer, it lowers their risk of colon cancer. But there's a difference in what prevents it and what will then treat it once it exists. And
understood.
So, and I have not looked at that data. So let me make myself a note. And I will see what papers I can find that say, yes, no, or maybe. But at this
once she recovers, I don't want her to be frail in the bone department.
No. We want her active and doing everything she can do. But for it may depend to some extent on the actual types. There are multiple subtypes of colorectal cancer. And so I think, if you really want the best answer, you might want to send me her pathology report.
Okay.
Okay, that'll tell me a little bit more about the tumor type, et cetera, and then I can look up that specific tumor type with any studies that have been done on colorectal cancer and
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much for the information.
You're welcome, sir. I wish I could be more help, but, when you don't know, you just got to say you don't know.
I understand. I appreciate that. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. We are going to grab another caller here. Let's at least get the question, Dr. Mixon, and then we'll take our break. Let's go to Burien. Philip is waiting on the line. Hi there, Philip.
Hello, Philip. Philip.
I think we have Philip on the line.
I think we need to fill up the time.
Okay. You know what? Let's go ahead and go to our break, and we'll be back with Philip in just a few minutes. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and if you'd like to get through, here is that phone number, 1-800-465-8770 for Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back with Philip and Dave and Isabella. Woo! We've got lots more questions on a bunch of different topics, too. Stay right there. Always reminds me of the movie where he's singing with all the soldiers, listening and thinking and having memories in that movie. Oh, one of my favorites. All right.
Well, no white Christmas for me this year. We're going to be in the Caribbean.
Okay, that's right. That's right. You'll be having lights on your palm trees.
Lights on the palm trees. That's right.
All right. We are going to see a Philip. If we have Philip, we do not have Philip. So let's go to Dave. Dave has some questions. Okay. Dave is calling from Tacoma. Welcome, Dave.
Hello, Dave. How can I help?
Yeah, so I have a question on the use of acoustic wave process on the restoration of erections.
Sure.
Is that a legitimate program?
It is one of the things we do. There are two types of machines that do it. The older ones that have been around for years and years, those I don't like very much because they smart, they hurt. But the newer one that we use called Viasure, it's got a much wider head and it spreads the energy out, but then focuses it deeper down into the penis. And we get pretty darn good results. It's usually six treatments. They take about 10 or 15 minutes each. And you get about 70% of the people that are under 70 get pretty good results. Now, the older you are, the less chance you're going to get a good result. So, but, you know, 70% under 70. Over 70, the percentage of improvement starts to drop. Statistically, the improvement, if you get a good improvement, it will last 6 months to a year, and then it starts to decline, and you need a touch-up, another set of six. So it's not a permanent, but it's long-lasting, okay? What else is there? There are other things we can do that even for people that this is not effective for. It's really kind of interesting your call today because I was just chatting about this with two of our doctors this past week. You know, none of the therapies work for everybody. And so it depends on how much arteriosclerosis, how much blood vessel disease you've got, how much neurologic disease you've got, a whole lot of stuff that can impact this. But am I presuming you've tried the PDE5 inhibitors, the Viagra, Levitra, Cialis, that sort of thing?
No, have not tried any of those. No.
Okay.
No, cardiac doctor suggested I not take any of those.
Okay, yeah. If you're on nitrates, if you're on nitroglycerin sort of drugs, then you probably should not because they drop your blood pressure.
I don't think I'm on nitrates. I'm on Losartan and Carvedilol.
Okay. I'm not quite sure what his concern is then, unless, you know, if you had a cardiac event and they suddenly gave you nitroglycerin, in the emergency room and you were on a PDE5 inhibitor that can drop your pressure more than they want it. The other things we can think about.
But I do have a, I do have a defibrillator.
All right. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I seem to be healthy in many respects. I mean, I'm active and not overweight and
well, you know,
I don't know what to say.
The PDE5 inhibitors work in about 70%+ of the people. There's about 25-30% of the people that the PDE5 inhibitors don't work in. And so then if those don't work, you know, we try the sound wave therapy, and that works in, like I said, in under 70, about 70% of men. Over 70, it goes down to 60, 50, 40, depending on how old you are and what else is going on. There's some newer therapies that have been used even for guys that everything else has failed on. And one of them is Botox, which I thought was fascinating.
Wow.
100 units of Botox, that's 1 cc, so it's a small injection, into the corpus cavernosum, into the center of the penis or the side, gives a good erection for about 3 months in the majority of men. So one shot every 3 months. Now, that's as opposed to the prostaglandin E injections that have to be used every time you want an injection. They work in most guys too, but it's a needle stick in the side base of the penis every time you want an injection. The Botox once every 3 months seems to work pretty well, and that's kind of neat. The other question is, what about repairing the damage that's accumulated by age and atherosclerosis and stuff inside the penis? And there's actually some studies now using PRP, platelet-rich plasma, because your platelets have 9 different growth factors in them. And there are guys that have done several studies now where they're injecting PRP into the penis. And over the course of a month or two, it actually seems to be repairing a lot of the internal damage and blood supply and giving good results for up to 7 or 8 months, needing to be repeated a little under once a year. And that's giving good results in about 60% of the people that everything else failed on. So even people with very, very major problems get pretty good results with that.
Doctor, do you do those treatments in your clinic?
We are looking at adding them. It's one of those things that we've, you know, this is brand new cutting edge research just being done. But, you know, it's the Botox is a very simple injection. The PRP is a bigger injection, but we do have a device to collect PRP. So there's no reason we couldn't do them. Certainly the Botox. I know Dr. Pentland is very interested in doing some Botox injections into guys. He's the one that uses our wave device, our shockwave device. Mm. And so he sees a lot of men with erectile disorder. And so I know he wants to have a cohort of guys to try out the Botox. The PRP, we'll probably do a little more thinking about that one.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
So is that procedures, covered in the annual cost?
Well, you have to pay for the Botox, obviously. We have to buy it. You have to buy it. They don't give it to me. But it's not a big cost. I mean, it's just whatever the price for the Botox is. And they,
what about the acoustic wave?
The acoustic wave does have an extra price, and I don't remember what it is. I think it's in the neighborhood of $1,500 or something for the 6 treatments, but I don't recall for sure. I'd have to check with the staff on that one.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure. I learned years ago that I should not get involved in the money, because every time I get involved in the money, I screw it up. So
you want to do everything for everybody for free.
Yeah, and that's the way you go broke. So So yes, I leave the finances to the finance people.
So, okay. Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye bye.
All right. We are still taking calls. I'm just going to keep going. Every time a caller hangs up, another one jumps on the line.
Right.
Isabella calling in from Seattle for a question for her husband. Hi, Isabella.
Hello, Isabella. How can we help?
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Dr. Mixon and Lett. My husband suffered a stroke in May of this year. And let me tell you, it's been hard. Physically, so they put him on like a losartan and amlopidine and a statin, but and he's doing okay physically. He started exercising and he's pretty good in that area. I mean, he has some issues with balance and stuff, but mentally, he's been suffering some cognitive issues like brain fog and maybe like short-term memory and things like trying to find words to explain himself. And I'm wondering, is there anything I could do or something, supplements or something that just to encourage his recovery?
There are some things that you can try.
Okay.
So one of the things is fairly high dose resveratrol. About 1,000 milligrams a day of resveratrol. The resveratrol has an impact on the lining of the arteries, the blood vessels, makes it smoother and improves blood flow to the brain. So even the microcirculation, the tiny, tiny vessels to the area of the brain that have been damaged, he gets a little better blood flow to those. And that, of course, helps with healing and repair. There are some things that can be done, like N-acetylcysteine, which it seems to help mitochondrial function, the energy producers within the cells to allow those to function somewhat better. Coenzyme Q10, up around 300 or 400 milligrams a day of that. These are reasonable things to try. They're more, general nostrums to improve blood flow and cellular health overall. But, the brain is a part of the body. So things we do that are good for the heart are good for the brain. So that's why, we give these things a shot. Physical activity is going to be important for him. It's really kind of interesting. There is a hormone called brain-derived neurotrophic factors that actually allow brain cells, nerve cells, to heal and grow and repair. And the name is a little bit misleading. It says brain-derived because when the researchers discovered it decades ago, they found it in the brains of animals, all right? So they call it brain-derived neurotrophic factors. It turns out that the single biggest source of brain-derived neurotrophic factors is muscle, working muscle. So the more muscle he's got, the more vigorously and frequently he works that muscle, the more brain-derived neurotrophic factors that he will produce to help heal and repair his damaged brain. So...
All right.
With a stroke, muscle control is often impaired, and that makes exercise difficult. Yeah, and especially if he's suffering from depression and cognitive issues with it. But you need to try to get him as physically active as you possibly can that is consistent with safety. We don't want him falling downstairs and hurting himself.
Well, he's pretty good. He goes to the gym by himself, so he's...
Good.
I mean, physically, he's really, from May till now, he's 180. He's done 180 physically. He still has some foot drop. His hand is better. He can feed himself. He can do a lot of stuff himself. It's just mentally, he still has, a lot of those issues. I also have one question. He was put on this atorvastatin 80 milligrams, and when he did his last month or the month before, we did his cholesterol and his triglycerides. His cholesterol was pretty good, in a good range, 144, but his triglycerides were like 157. They were pretty high. Now, is that from the first, is that from like diet, or is that, could it be like in a reaction to the medicine that he's been taking, or what could it be?
Or any or all of the above, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
You start getting metabolic dysfunctions, and whenever I see somebody with a rising triglyceride, I want to take a look at their insulin production. I want to look for insulin resistance. I want to look at inflammatory markers.
Well,
all of those sorts of things can increase triglyceride production.
Well, his glucose was like 124, so it was pretty high for the...
Yeah.
They said it was really, really high.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking maybe because, he had like some pasta or something, and I was thinking that day maybe that hiked his glucose up and kind of ruined the triglycerides and stuff. But
it may have, right. And so that's why you want to look at his A1C, which tells you what his sugar is averaging A1C. Over a 3 to 4 month period, rather than just an isolated sugar.
Okay, I could do that.
Super.
All right, thank you so much, Dr. Miss, and I appreciate that, and I hope you have a merry holidays in your Caribbean vacation.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yes.
This is once more. This is Daddy doing it for Ivory. I asked her what she wanted to do for Christmas, expecting that she would want to stay home with the Christmas tree.
Oh.
And she said, "I want beaches." And I said, "Okay. So shall we go to Florida or Hawaii?" And she said, "I want sugar white sand beaches."
Ah.
So I said, "Okay, we'll do a Caribbean cruise."
Oh, how fun. So fun. Lots of beaches to choose from. Oh,
thank you for the call, my dear.
Thank you, Isabella. All right, we're headed to Lacey. We have Dale on the line with a question for Dr. Mixon. Hi, Dale.
Hello, Dale.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help?
Okay, I just had a platelet function assay test done.
Okay.
And so it's looking at the collagen and epinephrine platelet function, and the ranges are from like 66 to 171. I'm at 174 on that one, but the collagen ADP platelet function is 59 to 109, and I'm at 146. So my clumping is not where it needs to be. And so the hematologist has recommended that for any procedures that I have that are invasive, I have 1 unit of platelets taken and given, and then the procedure done within 2 hours.
Right.
And I am a patient of yours, or of the clinic up there.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so I go, okay, then I needed to take and find out how I get these to my doctor up there, because I want to take and send him the whole
right.
gamut of things that the hematologist has done.
Okay. Well, the hematologist is at one of the major hospitals, I presume, so that you have a my chart where you can go in and look at your chart and download and print it, I hope?
I have a printed copy. I do not have a way to get it myself, but
okay.
I do have a printed copy that is from there.
Okay.
And,
well, if you bring it in, the staff will copy it and scan it and put it into your chart here so that we have a copy of it.
Okay.
And then you know, when you see your doc or you make up your appointment, remind him or her, I don't know who you're seeing.
I'm seeing Dr. Pentland.
Okay. Yeah, then remind Ken, that you're seeing the hematologist and you've had a platelet function study and so on. And that way he will know to address it during your visit, okay?
Okay, because I just wondered, is there other things that I can do that will enhance my clumping so that I'm not, because I've always been a bleeder,
yeah,
and bruise very easily, and I'm not on any kind of thinners at all.
Right.
So, and the only other thing that was up was the INR.
Uh-huh.
That was at 146, 1.46, and okay. The APTT was at 44.3.
All right. No. So you've got some slow clotting times.
Right.
But it's not outrageous. It's not, you know, it's not high enough that it really scares us. But he's okay. Right. If you're going to have a significant surgery, then you should get packed platelets right basically as you're going into the operating room.
Yeah, they said 2 hours, not that the procedure has to be done within 2 hours after the platelets are introduced.
Right. And if it's going to be a significant problem, what they'd do is they'd have platelet packs available in the OR, and they'd be infusing.
Right.
The anesthesiologist would be infusing those while you were having the surgery.
Okay.
So, but again, this is outside of the purview of what we normally do.
Okay, yeah. Right. Well, so. I understand that, but I'm outside of everything. Seems like
I do. Yes, you know, this is the sort of thing that makes my doctors nervous, and we want to make sure that we're correlating with your hematologist and with your surgeon. This is nothing that we want to tackle on our own. This is, you know, we are the longevity doctors, not the hematologists.
Right, I understand that.
Right.
Because I had a cardiologist want to take they can go in and do a heart cath and, you know, look at the pressures and look at everything in the heart. And I said, I want to see the hematologist before we start.
That's right.
And I told her that when I had my knees done, I took two of my own quarts in, but I had to have two more besides that.
Yeah.
When I had my knees done. And I'm going, okay. And then when they put the stent in my heart, why then I had to have a pint then too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, if I were a hematologist or if I were a cardiologist, putting a catheter into your arteries would make me really, really nervous. So
right.
No. Make sure that all your doctors work together because you need a team. This is not something
right.
that
Well, that's
one
what
of
I've been saying for a long time.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you for the call, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call there, Dale. All right, going to do a quick pitch here for Longevity Medical Clinics. We would love to have you become a patient like so many people have that listen to the show each and every week and call for additional information from Dr. Mixon. We would love to have you come in and just meet the staff here at Longevity Medical Clinics. We have three locations for you in Kirkland, Tacoma, and in Linwood. So there's a day and a time that you can pick that works with your schedule. You can go online to pick those days, or you can go and make a phone call and somebody will do that for you. We'd love to have you come in, meet the staff, see our facilities, and do a free health analysis. That will be a blood test and an in-body test that will let the doctors know what you're at risk for. Okay. I'm going to give you that phone number so that you can call and make that appointment. We want to see you healthy and active. And what, Dr. Mixon, in the new year?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and most important, happier
in the new year.
And the whole purpose of this clinic is a long and joyous life.
Yes.
And that's what we're shooting for.
Absolutely. Here's the number to say, okay, I want my free health analysis. It's 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG and online lmclinic.com. Just wanted to get that in real quick. We have one last caller, Dr. Mixon.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. We're headed to Bothell. Don has a question for you.
Hello, Don.
Hi,
How
Don.
Can I help?
Yes. Good morning. You can hear me?
We hear you just fine, sir.
Wonderful. Yeah. I have a question on inflammation, I guess you would say. I had a a crown, a white crown, come off of a tooth about 2 weeks ago. I took it to the dentist thinking he could just glue it back on, but he said, no, the tooth must come out. He mentioned the word necrosis, so I figured that tooth had to come out. So I went to the specialist dentist. He looked at my x-ray and said that there's a tooth on the other side that also needed to be extracted. And that didn't surprise me because my dentist had been telling me for 2 years that that tooth had to come out, but he doesn't speak very good English, and I just didn't understand him well and didn't understand really why that had to come out. But now the tooth is surrounded by inflammation, and I'm just wondering, in the 5 weeks I'm waiting now until the extraction, is there any kind of supplement I could take that might kind of go after the inflammation?
What you want to do, obviously, is to make sure the blood supply is well enhanced, and that any infection, so, you know, rinse, lots and lots of fluids, nothing terribly hot or cold because that'll cause you pain, but you need to make sure that the exudates, the things being produced as a result of the inflammation, don't sit there and just pile up and fester. Do they put you on antibiotics of some sort?
No.
Okay. So I guess they don't think there's an overt infection there. But then I wonder what's causing the inflammation if they don't think it's an infection. That's a little odd. You know, I mean, if you've got decay in the tooth, if you've got decay under the tooth, there's usually a bacterial infection that's causing that decay. So what they normally try to do is to knock down the infection, and then that in turn decreases the inflammation. Don't know. I'd have to talk with one of my dentist consults on this. I wonder if Brian McKay is listening. Brian, if you're listening, give us a call and give us a dental consult on this, would you please?
All right. And you know what? This was a quick one, Don, but our time is up. We got to say goodbye, but of course you can listen to our next show too.
I'm sorry. I don't have a better answer for you, but dental is out of my wheelhouse.
There you go. All right. And that's the end of the show for today. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll be back next week right here. Thank you for listening.